All right, if everybody will take their seats and get ready, we haven't got a quorum yet, so we'll just open up the meeting and not take any official actions until once we do. So Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance will hear Representative O'Driscoll's bill, House File 406. Where's it?
Layover.
Okay. Yep. When we do make a motion, it'll be to layover for possible inclusion, I understand. So, Representative O'Driscoll, go ahead and begin with your presentation.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be able to be before you today to talk about House File 406 this session. This bill is not unfamiliar to the committee. We had this bill this far 2 years ago and last year as well on the budget supplement bill. What the bill deals with is de-escalation training. In the state of Minnesota, we have a number of law enforcement officials who perform heroic duties, as well as other public safety personnel, who are there to provide aid, assistance, and help to us during times of crisis and during some of the not best times for us as Minnesotans. We also have men and women who are returning from armed services who have served our country nobly and honorably. Sometimes what happens is those paths, when they cross one another, can be somewhat problematic. Veterans, when they return, oftentimes have the ability to integrate back into their families, to their work environments, but that's not always the case for everyone. Sometimes the road to reentry is a little bit easier for some than others. What we'd like to do is we'd like to be able to provide Minnesota law enforcement and public safety officials with some additional opportunity for training, as they have in many different aspects of their job, in this case, de-escalation training, to be able to provide for those law enforcement public service and public safety, officials, the opportunity to be able to learn more about how to, coming upon a situation that involves a veteran who may be having some difficulties or issues, to be able to provide them training to help de-escalate that situation, to get those veterans the opportunity to be able to get the help and service that they need, to protect the law enforcement officials, the veteran, and those who may be involved in that situation. Mr. Chair, I have a couple of testifiers today who have been actively involved in providing this training across the state of Minnesota to those public safety officials. And I'd like to be able to, if the chair wishes, to introduce Jim Baker, who's going to visit with us. And Jim is also the individual who helped us to start our veterans courts here in the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chair.
Welcome, sir. Begin with your name and title, and go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is John Baker. I'm an attorney with the Baker Williams Law Firm in Minnesota. I'm a retired gunnery sergeant in the United States Marine Corps. I spent 22 years in the Marine Corps. I was a First Gulf War vet and a variety of other things that our nation sent us to in the 80s and 90s. After I retired from the Marine Corps, I became a lawyer. And a couple years ago, I chaired the initiative to start veteran courts in Minnesota. And as everyone probably knows, we've got veteran courts and different iterations of veteran courts throughout the state of Minnesota. When I was doing that work, I knew that the boots on the ground folks are the law enforcement. And when we have veterans in crisis, and by the way, I'm only talking about a small percentage of our veterans coming back from these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We've had 2.5 million Americans serving these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the data says that there's only a quarter of those men and women that have served that are coming back with actual PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Well, half of those folks go unreported, untreated, and then some of those end up in our criminal justice system. But their first contact with criminal justice system in law is law enforcement. So we developed a course. I work with the Upper Midwest Community Policing Institute, and Mr. Bill Miklas is here as well from the Institute will be speaking. We developed a course funded by the Department of Justice a number of years ago, and we've done federal training, and Bill is a retired law enforcement. I'm a retired military. We co-teach this course. Matter of fact, we were just in St. Louis, Missouri last week teaching de-escalation tactics to law enforcement. Happened to be for veterans, but it was de-escalation tactics. Next week we're going to the Atlanta area. We've traveled the country doing this. As Representative O'Driscoll said, we got funding a couple years ago through a bill that Representative Detmer sponsored to develop a Minnesota-specific course. And we've developed this curriculum. We had an opportunity to take our national course and even make it better at the state level. So we've developed this curriculum. We've been teaching this course. Bill and I and a couple other folks have been teaching this course throughout the state of Minnesota. Members, in your packet today should be a map of where we've taught this course throughout the state of Minnesota. We've only thus far, with the funding that we've had, we've been able to reach about 10% of about the 10,000, roughly 10,000 licensed law enforcement in the state of Minnesota. We're here to testify on the bill and let you know that we have been teaching this course. If the legislature desires to add additional funding, we would very much like to continue to teach this course. As I said, I teach this course. I'm the retired military guy. I don't know anything about law enforcement. I haven't been in law enforcement. That's why I have Bill Miklas, who co-teaches it, and Bill is with the Institute.
Okay, sir, go ahead with your name and the organization and begin.
Good morning. My name is William Miklas, or Bill Miklas, and I'm with the Upper Midwest Community Policing Institute.
Go ahead.
We've been, as John mentioned, I'm a retired law enforcement officer. My background is in the tactics side. I was the commander of our tactical team for Burnsville, Minnesota, for 20 years. And during that period, we developed a lot of skills in dealing with the tactical side of people, dealing with people in crisis. And I was also cross-trained through some negotiation and de-escalation skills training to be more well-rounded. And it's my experience that we found the more de-escalation training that we can provide early on in a law enforcement officer's career, the better we're going to have in terms of outcomes. UMCPI, or Upper Midwest Community Policing Institute, has trained this course in Minnesota. We've got about 750 people trained. We've gotten feedback from those individuals as well, and indicated that the stuff that we're training them does work and has worked in very specific cases. Our goal is to try to hit 25% of law enforcement officers, and there are approximately 10,000 licensed peace officers in the state of Minnesota. So we're looking at 2,500 people trained. That will provide a tipping point where we can start getting momentum in dealing with the de-escalation skills.
Mr. Chair, if I might add.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I want the committee and others that are reviewing and doing with us today on this is we do not have a crisis situation that every veteran who returns is in need of these types of services. Again, I want to underscore the fact that the majority of the returning veterans do have a successful reintegration. Some situations, family, while they were away serving our country, employment situations, personal finances can all contribute to uneasy situations for all of us, including veterans. And so what we're looking to do is, as the two testifiers have said today, our goal is 25% of law enforcement to be trained. The problem that we have is the law enforcement people that have already been trained may have been retired, may have left law enforcement, so we're constantly having to work toward that goal of 25%. Even though we're at about 10% of law enforcement, it doesn't mean that we only have 15 to go when you look at the gross number of people who are in law enforcement. Second thing that I want to underscore is that these funds are being dedicated to the POST Board, the Peace Officers and Strategic Training Board, Standards Board, excuse me, to be able to allocate money to these types of endeavors, as well as to incorporate into the curriculum for new law enforcement officers who are coming in this type of de-escalation training. So when they hit the street, as the saying goes, they'll already be equipped with this. We think this is a good way to be able to cross-pollinate the success that's necessary for this. Mr. Chair, one of the things that I'll add for the committee's benefit is I'm oftentimes asked, how will we know if this is successful? How will we know if you're meeting your goal? And I say we turn on the evening news, we pick up the newspaper, and we do not see these kinds of situations that we're trying to prevent today on the front page of the paper or leading the news. That's how we know that we've been successful.
Okay, members, we've got Representative Hertaus followed by Representative Johnson for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative O'Driscoll. Thanks for bringing this forward, and doing some of the work that we want to take care of our veterans. As I was listening to the testimony, I was thinking to myself, you know, we've moved away from a draft and a lottery system where we have now a volunteer army. And I guess I'm wondering, what support does the employer, the federal government and our armed forces, what support is being provided to make sure that veterans in all of the 50 states have access to the services that you're proposing? Should they not be really doing more?
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hertas, that's an excellent question. The state of Minnesota has a long history of supporting its veterans when it returns. Many of you may be familiar with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Community Program, which actually has its origination and origin here in the state of Minnesota. Our current Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, the former Adjutant General, was responsible for starting that program. And the way that we do reintegration with members of the armed services, the services that are available, they may be identified as having trouble, but that doesn't mean that the government's watching over them, which we don't want to have happen 24/7, Big Brother. It's where they may find themselves in a situation where the law enforcement of individuals may be called or asked to provide aid and assistance that we're looking at. I can assure you that the federal government is putting money in to help, but this is another way to be able to help support and to supplement those types of services.
Okay, well, before we get to the next question, we'll do some housekeeping here. We'll call the meeting to order the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee and start out with a roll call.
Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Considine. Representative Dean. Representative Hertas.
Here.
Representative Hillstrom.
Here.
Representative Howe.
Here.
Representative Lohmer.
Here.
Representative Lucero.
Here.
Representative Neuberger.
Ready to serve.
Representative O'Neill. Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Rosenthal.
Here.
Representative Schoen.
Here.
Representative Ward.
She's here.
Yeah, she checked.
Yeah. Representative Winkler.
Yeah.
And Representative Zerwas.
Here.
Okay, would somebody move the minutes for March 4th? Representative Hertzwas moves the minutes for March 4th.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we get back to our questions. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. I really don't have a question, I have a comment. So I've actually taken parts of this course. This course not only helped with the veterans, and I want to thank you for putting this course together. The first time I was scheduled for it, it was canceled because of funding ran out. I was able to take part of it after I retired to see what the course was like, because that course was being put on in Cambridge. In fact, one of the instructors is from my area. But this course not only helps our veterans, it trains our law enforcement how to deal with these situations, not just with the veterans, but with everybody. It's not just the veterans that have some of these issues. It's probably one of the best courses I've been taking part of, and in my career I've had a lot of different courses, but it is an excellent course. And now not only law enforcement officers, the licensed officers, there are many of them want to take it, but it's a matter of being able to take it because of funding. We are now, some departments in the sheriff's office are sending their jailers to it when they can, and the corrections officers, to help de-escalate situations, not just with the veterans, but with other people with issues that they're having in the jail. And I want to thank you for putting this course together. Like I said, this is one of the best courses that's out there, and it's much needed. I actually wish we could do more funding for it.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I know you made a comment on how many officers have been trained and how many you propose. Can you give us an idea, is this a train-a-trainer program, or is this just to train these, are we doing this so we can train the departments that can train the rest of their officers?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Baker to address that issue for us.
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Howell. This is not a train-a-trainer program. This is training law enforcement directly. We have our federal program right now is currently a train-the-trainer program. And we're going to be teaching that federal program at the Minneapolis Police Department here coming up next month, and they'll be able to train. It's a little bit different than our Minnesota model. We've actually been able to make our Minnesota program better because we're constrained by the DOJ and what we've done at the federal level. So we like this program. We would love to be able to get more funding to be able to do a train-the-trainer. The train-the-trainer program that we do right now is a two-day program. This course that we do here in Minnesota is a one-day program, and law enforcement get 8 post-credits for that, as members know that they need to receive credit every year to maintain their license.
Okay, Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to see us move towards that train-the-trainer model because I think that'll really expand our coverage, and I think this is important to understand that you know, Minnesota leads the nation, or they did lead the nation in veteran suicides, and so this is a step in the right direction to try and reduce that, because we have had suicide by cop by many veterans. This will help us the police officers and the first responders understand how to de-escalate that situation and probably bring that to a more satisfactory situation, and I applaud that effort. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, I think probably for House Research. I'm just wondering, on lines 1-7 and 1-8, it talks about public safety for training in state and local, and it says on 1.8, community safety personnel. And I'm just wondering if community safety personnel is defined somewhere else in statute, or what exactly that's specifically getting at.
You have any idea, Mr. Diebel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas, I don't believe it's defined. I believe Mr. Baker mentioned that they're training jailers as well as peace officers, and so I think it's intended to allow for training of anyone that comes in contact in a public safety capacity with veterans in crisis.
And Representative O'Driscoll, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, thank you. The legislative intent when we wrote this, because this is the exact language that we had last year. You have Representative Schoen, who is in law enforcement. You have Representative Neuberger, who's in EMS. They're both community, when we look at this, community safety personnel. It's what the situation that they find themselves in, so that it's allowed to be covered, or people can attend on a broader base from the public safety realm, or community service, or community service officers, parole officers, whoever we think would want to avail themselves of this that would benefit because of the contact that they may have with veterans.
Okay. Is there, Representative Zerwas, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Driscoll, that's one I wanted to make sure is that it was intentionally left broad so we could have the training open to as many people as possible that are going to interact with veterans potentially in crisis. So thank you for that.
Okay, any questions, members? Any questions from the public or anybody to testify? Okay, with none, I'll move your bill for consideration once we got a quorum. I forgot to do that. And then it would be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Chair.
Do you have any closing comments? I'm sorry.
The only comments that I would say is that very quickly, my father's been was involved in law enforcement for a number of years when he first started. The amount of training that people received was, congratulations, here's your badge, here's your gun, go do good things. Keep the people safe, and then they needed additional training because they found CPR was going to be good and helpful, and they found that working in different kinds of things and training that and being able to then move to DARE training and other kinds of training and crisis training, this is just another element that we can help law enforcement to be able to help our citizens in the state of Minnesota. And so, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for your time and your consideration on this very important matter.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, and your testifiers. A bill will be held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Okay. Representative Rarick here. Well, Representative Rarick, we're going to have an informational-only hearing this morning. We won't be voted on, but you have House File 1089, otherwise known as Bring Fun and Personal Responsibility Back to Minnesota. So go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I really appreciate this opportunity to once again begin the discussions of expanding the use and sales of fireworks in Minnesota. This bill is the same bill that was presented in 2012 that passed the House and the Senate, and that was vetoed by Governor Dayton. As I've been looking through all the files from the old one, looking at the concerns that were raised, I'm definitely looking forward to the opportunity to work with those, began the conversations a moment ago with the gentleman behind me, so that we can start to begin to address the safety issues that people are worried about. I know that is one of the major sticking points that keep this from going forward, and Minnesotans really want to see this happen, and they're willing to work, and I believe work with law enforcement and firefighters and safety people to put in place what they will be comfortable with so that we can enjoy fireworks not only on Independence Day but other times when we have family get-togethers and that during the summer. So I know these safety concerns are very important to deal with. The injury rate has actually been going down. We look at the statistics from the state of Indiana. They passed legislation very similar to this in 2006, and their injury rates have steadily been decreasing. I'm further looking into it to determine if that is because of safety programs that they've put in place and, let's say, public safety announcements, things of that nature. Those are the types of things that I'm willing to, you know, sit down and work with to see if those are the ways that we can make things more safe. When we look at the injuries that have happened, Indiana has done some good research into what types of fireworks cause injuries. Two of the largest, 20%, are caused by firecrackers in Indiana, and 17% by sparklers. Two types that are already legal in the state of Minnesota. And when we look at the injuries rates in the state of Minnesota that happen to our children, those under the age of 9 and those from 9 to 19 are actually two of our larger injury rate age groups. I would guess that the burns and injuries of that nature are coming from sparklers, types that are already legal. So this bill is not addressing expanding fireworks that are actually causing the majority of the injuries. So I have a lot more work and research to do to figure a lot of this out, but I'm glad we're beginning this process, and I'm looking forward to working with others who have far more information and knowledge too. So one of the things that we know injuries are going to happen, but they're a part of everyday life as well. We are involved in activities all the time that have a risk of causing injury. And when we look at the numbers, in the state of Minnesota in 2014, the reported injuries, which I realize may be low because not all hospitals do report, but there were 70 total reported injuries due to fireworks last year, of which 15 were from age 0 to 9 and 14, 10 to 19. I do not have the exact statistics, but how many of our children are being hurt in our youth sports activities? Activities such as youth football, gymnastics. Far more injuries are happening there. We are addressing that. We're constantly trying to figure out how to make those sports safer, but we're not trying to ban those sports. Concussions have been a major, major topic, but we're not trying to get rid of football or other sports that have these types of injuries. So I think Minnesotans would desire that we take that same approach. Instead of banning fireworks, let's look at how we make them more safe so that we can all enjoy them. That's another side. So many people that I have spoken to as I've begun this discussion have so many memories of fireworks as a child, whether it was their parents that lit them off or they were allowed to light them off or it was neighbors that they watched. And that's a part of the way of life for some people. I realize it's not for everyone, but everyone can enjoy them, whether they're firing them off or not. If you're not comfortable with that, then watch somebody else who does. But for those who feel that they have the ability, that they will do it safely, they should have the ability to do that. And the fact is it's going on right now in the state of Minnesota anyway. We can look at my neighboring state, the state of Wisconsin. Their fireworks laws are established specifically in mind with getting Minnesotans to cross the border, buy fireworks there, and bring them back to Minnesota to use here. And we see that by the major highways that leave Minnesota going to Wisconsin. Highway 48 that leaves Hinckley going to Danbury, Wisconsin. There are three facilities right as you cross the border in Wisconsin that sell fireworks. Highway 70 leaving Rock Creek to Grantsburg. There are two permanent structures and then temporary structures that go up to sell fireworks there. Highway 14 down in southeast Minnesota going into South Dakota. Tents and semi-trailers establish themselves right at the border every year before Independence Day. So these other states are bringing in revenue from Minnesotans who are going there, buying fireworks, and coming back to Minnesota to use them. It is estimated that $3 to $3.5 million in sales tax alone is leaving the state. That does not include the revenue by the companies that sell and the wages that are earned by the people who are working the stands. I have long enjoyed using and shooting off fireworks myself, but it was a constituent of mine who actually brought this forward to my attention that made me want to bring this bill forward. And a letter was handed out. He wanted to be here today to testify, but he is out of state. I won't read the whole letter, but a little synopsis. He and his brother are licensed pyrotechnics operators. They also run a little business selling what is currently legal. In 2012, they were preparing to expand, open three different locations to sell fireworks. So jobs would be created, extra income would be created for them, and people wouldn't have to travel as far in our area to get fireworks. And I know there are many other people around the state, whether it would be small businesses such as a couple of brothers who start something up or bigger companies, they would expand, jobs would be created, business would flourish. It would be far more in Minnesota than just the sales tax revenue that would be kept within the state instead of going to our neighboring states. So, again, we have so many different things that are safety-related that we do not try to outlaw. Another example, this time of year, how many people are out on our frozen lakes, ice fishing, skating, things of that nature? There is a risk of breaking through the ice, being injured, of dying. And when that happens, we do put our people who, you know, rescue services in danger, but we're not trying to outlaw and ban those. We are trying to come up with better ways to rescue people, and we train our people to be able to get them, and we try to raise awareness of the dangers. And I believe we can take that same approach with fireworks and bring back a tradition in Minnesota that has been here for a long time. With that, I would be open to answering any questions.
Thank you, Representative Ray. Good presentation. Representative Schoen, we'll take a few questions before we get into the opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rarick, you said your goal is to make fireworks safer? You want to make fireworks safer? Is that what I heard you say?
I guess
fireworks themselves, I don't know that we can make safer. We can make the people who use the fireworks safer in the way that they handle them and the way that they use them.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rurik, so what's your plan? What is your plan then outside of just legalizing fireworks to make the people that handle them safer? Are you intending to include mandatory training at the sale point of fireworks? I'm just trying. Are you funding that? Are you gonna impose some or get some dollars added to this bill to do the training that would make it safer?
I'm not.
Representative Rurik.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not looking to mandate any type of training, but by legalizing them, we can provide, you know, public service announcements that can maybe be funded through some of the sales tax that's generated through this. Create other programs to, whether it be training right at the facilities, that it would be voluntary. But, you know, again, we have so many activities that we partake in that we trust people to either get their own training or ask for the training. So we can make things available. And I know in speaking to the gentleman from my district, they are more than happy to, you know, go over safety with their customers. That way they keep coming back. They don't want their customers to be injured because then they're going to stop using fireworks. So I believe the suppliers, they will be more than happy to provide information for their customers to be safe.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Rurik, so then how do you envision this so it's standardized across the points of sale? I mean, are you going to push forward a program that says this is what we want you to put out because we feel that this is the minimum training or this is the minimum safety review? And then how much is that going to cost the state?
Representative Rurik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is something that I have not begun looking into, but part of what I was saying, you know, to begin the conversations with the manufacturers, the distributors, what can we do to make that safer so that these other agencies are feeling more comfortable with allowing the sales, the expansion.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Schoen.
Representative Rurik, and so thank you for clarifying that because, I mean, really the only way to make fireworks safer is to, you know, make sure the manufacturers make a safer firework. So, and then otherwise, you said safer handling, and that requires some training depending upon what it is, so I understand that. And, you know, I maybe would take umbrage just a little bit with your comparisons to football and ice fishing because we do ice fishing. A lot of people do it over a great amount of time, and, you know, we have a few people that go through the ice. That is true. We have some people out. I'm a border area, too, right next to Prescott. The St. Croix River is just to the east of my district, and folks will drive snowmobile right off into open water where the water is in the confluence at the Mississippi and the St. Croix. That does happen. And football, I mean, how many people are we putting on the football field every day? Sheer numbers. But when we come to the 4th of July, we do have around that area, we have a lot of reports of folks that come in a short period of time with injuries from fireworks. But I will tell you, if this were to go forward, one of the things that I have the biggest issue with is I would narrow down the days that you can possess and use. Because when it comes to the 4th of July in my community, and I want to make sure that we don't limit communities from banning this altogether because I'm not sure my community would be very happy about it, because people can't control themselves. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a war zone. And then they're lighting off fireworks at 2 in the afternoon until 4 in the morning. And it's a nonstop drag on us trying to respond to that. So if we said, you know, most people are on the 4th of July, they're like, go ahead, we're going to live with it. It's fine. Or the first Friday night when there's a bonfire and no one cares that there's a loud party because you've been waiting all fall or all year to have that bonfire night. And then when it carries on and on and on, that's when the problem happens. So that if we get to a point, I hope you'll work on dates and other things like that at a minimum to say no, and then we got to put some teeth into it. and make the penalty a little more severe. If you're actually going to possess this outside of those dates and actually use the fireworks past a certain amount of time of the night or whatever it is, I think you need to look at that too. And I mean, I'm with Representative Cornish just a little bit on this one. I hate to admit it. I mean, I like, these are fun. But we do, this is probably a little too loose and a little too fast. And and for me, June, the beginning of June to July 7th doesn't cut it. I'd be like the day before and the day after the 4th would maybe be the best. All right? So thank you.
It enforcement might differ from location to location, but when I was chief of police in Lake Crystal, I told my guys just to leave them the heck alone and to let people have fun and to only act on it if they had a specific complaint where somebody was injured or threw it in somebody's face. Otherwise, in Vernon Center, my hometown, the July 4th celebration, we all sit out in the lawn and we hire somebody to come in and do the legal portion of it. But there's rockets and bombs going every which way through the air, and people are laughing. They have a great time. And sure, you get a few casualties or a spark in the eye, but there's lots of other ways. And fireworks has already got a warning on it. It says throw before you, after you light. And for some people that can't read or not old enough, when it does go off in your hand, that's an educational experience too. So, Representative Quam.
It's all funny and games.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank the representative for bringing the bill, because I believe last time on the floor I voted against it, but I would have moved to move it to another committee because having the discussion, we all know that there's a lot of behind the scenes, under the table, fireworks going on. You don't have to drive far in greater Minnesota and around that time of the year to see stuff popping up, and you know it's not a public activity. So if there's some way to, I guess, improve the general safety, whenever you're doing it behind the scenes and less, more, you know, more hidden, I think there's also, you know, more danger. So anytime we have discussion on this type of activity, I think it's better, because we might come up with ideas to make it safer, whether it's still illegal or part of it changes. I do know people that take the legal stuff and they will open up a lot of legal stuff and recombine it into some homemade, some of it's pretty interesting, I understand. So you have that activity, and then you have somebody that's not professional doing it. But this is, you know, we chuckle. This is serious. My wife was the head of a first responder squad for many years, and this is not trivial. But ignoring that during a few weeks, it's pretty prevalent. I don't know if they go on Sundays to Wisconsin for other things and pick some up, or if they're going over there to pick stuff up and get stuff on Sundays, but adult beverages seem to be fairly well accompanying some of these activities and festivities too, which adds to the problems. So I want to, this was not a comfortable bill to bring forward, and I want to thank the representative for doing it, because we have the discussion, and maybe something good will come from having the discussion, and good luck with your future endeavors in trying to improve this. Thank you.
Representative Dean, Ward, and Hertaus is next. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rarick. I commend you on bringing this forward. I think your intention is good. I just want to make a quick comment to Representative Schoen. It's good to hear that they actually stop at 4 a.m. and you're part of the state, because they go all through till about the sun comes up in my district. Yeah. I guess one of the questions I would have for you, and I know that the chair sort of alluded to this, that generally people aren't cited or arrested for the use of fireworks. I mean, do you have any statistics statewide, how many citations or how many people are actually arrested for fireworks in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I do not. It is something that I'm working on getting. I've had that discussion, and that is exactly one of the things we're looking at getting so that we can present that to see. I keep hearing it tossed around, you know, different. As I talk to people, they allude to this as the most unenforced law in Minnesota. I heard that as I've listened to all the testimony from 2012 that happened, too. So it's something that we're definitely wanting to look at to see, you know, is it something that's being enforced, or, you know, so that in cases, I do realize there are cases where people go on too long, and that law enforcement has to be called there, you know, because they're interfering with other people. And that's why part of it, to address Representative Schoen, we're not addressing, trying to take away the ability of a city or a township or a county to put on restrictions as far as the use of the fireworks. So an ordinance could be passed to put on time limits, to put on, you know, restrictions, which days, how long through the summer. That is there and available for different areas. So,
Representative Schoen, I just got a email from a former staff member here that says the American Pyrotechnical Association conducts safety educational campaigns in states where fireworks are legal. That's all it says. I don't know if they, well, they probably make millions of bucks selling this stuff, so they give classes, I suppose. I don't know. Representative Schoen.
Well, Mr. Representative Cornish, then Representative Rarick should put together a plan to spend some money to make sure that we educate folks. I don't know. What do you want to? Maybe he wants to throw together a quick author's amendment that would appropriate $1 million to make sure that we do this.
Well, I don't think we do that as long as it's free already. Let them guys.
Well, maybe he'd like to mandate it at the point of sale.
No mandates. I remember one of the first times I got in trouble as a juvenile. I was coming back from Sioux Falls. I can't remember what we got stopped for, but they took a whole trunk of fireworks right from us. And I cried all the way back to Mankato, I tell you. Of course, that was 1969. I was a senior. In there. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Warrick. My birthday is the 4th of July. And my mother still insists that I always thought the fireworks were for me. I took actually, and I still do, a great deal more pleasure in watching the faces of people enjoy the fireworks displays than I did actually the fireworks. I grew up in Kansas, and I think the laws then were very much, when I was little, were very much, remember some changes, very much like what we have now, because they were very free and open. And I remember reading in the paper and hearing my parents talk about fireworks being thrown into car windows. Because, of course, we didn't have air conditioning, and, you know, car windows were open in July in Kansas. And terrible, terrible things happening, and lots of accidents. So they really cracked down on it. And I remember my dad taking us out to a dirt country road outside of town so we could learn how to properly light snakes and firecrackers and the limited things and real strict instructions on how to do sparklers and be safe. I'm not sure that everybody has the benefit of that kind of cautious training and preparation. And my grandchildren enjoy these things. So I spent a lot of 4th of July's in Missouri as well, and I still have family in Missouri. And I'll tell you, the fireworks displays I see in our surrounding states are amateurs compared to Missouri. It's a really, really big business. And I am sensitive to the lack of income that Minnesota is getting in terms of sales tax, because it is big business and they do make a lot of money on it. But do we have any data on the correlation between incidents, accidents, fires, injuries in the states where it's available the way the bill would present it, compared to the states like ours that are more restrictive? Do we have any data?
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have just received some data that I am beginning to go through, and I cited some of that from the state of Indiana. In 2006, they passed legislation very, very similar to this. And so we're just beginning to go through a lot of that information to decipher that so that we can bring some of that. But from what we're seeing in Indiana anyway, their rate of injuries went down after they legalized the, and that's, I'm trying to find out and dig into this more to find out if it was because of, just like Chairman Cornish mentioned, the training that is available that the fireworks companies are providing, that that they will have there and available, because I do know they want their customers to keep coming back. So we're beginning to look into that, but so I'll definitely have more of that information available as I get further into this.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rarick. I appreciate that, and I think you were presenting that when I came in. I had another conflict. So I apologize for you having you repeat that. My question really is about other states as well, those who have had, you know, long-standing sales and availability, and what are their rates compared to what ours are currently? I hope that you would get that for us soon, and I'm not sure how that will impact what we are doing today, but it seems kind of after the fact. Thanks.
Okay. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Rarick. Mr. Chair, I might have been on the road behind you and saw you got pulled over at that time. Yeah, it's a common occurrence, and I think what I'd like to contribute to this dialogue is really, you know, the criminalization of behavior, which, you know, is normal. Right now, we're raising the speed limits on 314 miles of road because nobody's driving 55 miles an hour. Same thing might be said about efforts to make markets a little freer, and the fact that people buy and consume alcohol on Sunday and they drive across the border and all the border regions, and even not necessarily the border. I'm well aware of people who on Sunday make a half an hour drive to go over to Stillwater or Somerset and buy things that aren't available here in Minnesota. I think the same is true with fireworks. Any of us who are vacationing or around the state, you'd have to admit we don't have a fireworks law because they're going off all the time during the holiday. And I can't say that it's a chronic problem when it's not the holiday, but the reality is all the things you're not supposed to have, you can witness and see anywhere. And for those times that I might spend the holiday at the lake, all around the entire lakeshore, you see rather magnificent private displays of fireworks that are supposedly illegal. So as far as the behavior, I think we saw what happened with Prohibition. We made that illegal for a period of time, and it doesn't work. And it's not working here in Minnesota because people simply drive across the border and get the fireworks, and we don't really criminalize the behavior. We just make it more difficult for them to have that. When I was a boy growing up, it seemed like more of the accidents and the severe accidents with regard to fireworks were those efforts to make homemade ones because he couldn't get it. And young boys, as they are, get creative in figuring out how you can get gunpowder or dismantle munitions to collect enough gunpowder to tape together a bomb and make something that's going to be really loud or really make a real wreck out of a garbage can. But nonetheless, that I think a lot of that risk behavior would go away if we had fireworks that were legal and able to be purchased. So thank you, Representative Rarick, for bringing this forward. I think it is something that it's time to put an archaic law behind us. And lastly, well, I guess Representative Schoen left, but he had made a comment about the training, and I think that's a good idea. I mean, if manufacturers are providing information, that would be good. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, we've Representative Rosenthal.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rarick, thank you for coming to see me and talking to me about this. And as I shared with you, the kid inside of me is fighting the public safety side of me, has been expressed many times so far. I've been known to put on a display now and then. But my question gets more to who will be able to sell these? How are they regulated? Are they any different than they're regulated now? I know in Wisconsin you'll see a car on the side of the road and they're selling huge bombs out of the back. And I was wondering if you've given that any thought.
Representative Rurick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is addressed in the bill. There would be local permits that would be taken. And it specifically right now states the structures, which tents are allowed to be one of the structures right now, ranging up to permanent structures. I know that is one of the debates that happened last time around, what type of structures, things just of that very nature. So again, those are things that I'm willing to sit down and talk with as this goes on. Right now, we talked about it with the limited amount of time that they're being sold. The tents seem to make a lot of sense for that. Those issues are addressed in the bill to make sure that the permitting has to take place through a local area, so that not just anybody setting up a stand somewhere.
Representative Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is people who have the designation to sell these, are they required to go under more training to deal with the more explosive nature of these types of fireworks?
Representative Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, that I do not believe was addressed in the bill, so that would be something that we could definitely have a discussion on.
Okay. Representative Howe and then Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'll start with a question first, but I think that possibly we should give cities an opportunity to maybe allow them to do some zoning to keep these in a certain location, because as far as where they sell them, I don't think certain areas are conducive for the storage and merchandising of the fireworks. I think that's something we possibly need to look at. And I'm torn on this, because as a kid, I lived an hour from South Dakota. We spent a ton of money on fireworks. And that's a whole nother deal. Is I wish I had some of those dollars back in my pocket as of the money we spent. It's another place for young folks to lose their dollars, and then that's another aspect of this we don't look at. But you know, we had the bottle rocket wars and the Roman candle wars, and we had $160 worth of fireworks go up in 10 seconds because somebody lit something that they shouldn't have too close to the pile, and kids were running every direction, and they had fireworks chasing them every direction. We got lucky. Nobody got hurt that time. But I've got a brother that blew a hole in his eye with a cone that's got he's got permanent damage with a piece of plastic to put that eye back together. We started our house on fire, light bottle rockets off the second floor of the house, and started the mattress on fire. So, and we were lucky that sister came up and said she smelled smoke. We didn't have smoke detectors in the house at the time, so we were lucky we didn't kill anybody. So I'm torn on this. Yeah, they're fun, but they come at a cost. And what that cost is and how we mitigate that cost, I'm not quite sure. So I don't. If we were voting on this, I'm not sure which side I'd go on, because I share the aspect of, yeah, I like freedom, but holy smokes, that rationale of playing with fire is a dangerous topic. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rarick. Just a couple more things. In the testimony you offered earlier, you were making a comparison to sports and people taking risky positions on things and risky activities. But you also mentioned injuries from fireworks happen to people at all ages, if I heard. So you mentioned 0 to, I don't know where it was, but I'm thinking infants? you know, they're not choosing to participate in a sport. They're not choosing to participate in an activity when, as very young children, they're injured in ways like Representative Howe just described, life-changing, permanent damage. And yes, we will receive some, the state will receive some financial income from this. I'm wondering, again, on the statistics, what will the data show? Does that offset the increased fire and police protection and activities that need to happen in response to injuries, accidents, people breaking the law, or using things inappropriately? We've talked about the time that it could be used, but I hadn't heard anybody say New Year's Eve. You know, fireworks get stored. They don't all get blown up on the 4th of July or within a few days of that time. They get stored. And we haven't talked about any training in terms of safe storage of this. If you don't use them all, you want to save some for New Year's, which I don't think is legal either. But if you did, how is that being stored safely so that we don't have kids getting into the fireworks at a different time of the year when parents aren't home or whatever? Like Representative Howe was describing, get in and have some fun. They're dangerous, and they do need to be managed in a safe way. And I'm just not sure that I'm really conflicted about it, too.
Hey, Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To your first concern, that was one that we looked at, the 0 to 9. One of the things, what's not showing in there, but what we were looking at is I would venture a guess that the majority of those injuries were from sparklers, because we always hand the sparklers off to the little kids, and when we were looking at the statistics of the burns that happened, I don't have that information to say how many percent were from sparklers, but our guess is that that's where the vast majority of those injuries come from. And so it's not that maybe 0 to 4 range, it was more in that 5 to 9 range, where a little kid was handed a sparkler and they weren't trained as well as you were when you were younger. So those are some things that, yeah, we're hoping, you know, like I said, willing to address how we train people, make them more safe. But until we begin the conversation again, you know, then that's not happening at all. So,
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up. What's the temperature on a sparkler?
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have it was somewhere, it's a little over 1,000 degrees right at the point of the
12 to 15. All right, Representative Lucero, and then we should move on to the opposition here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Three people. Go ahead.
I just wanted to, not a question, just a comment. I was just brainstorming off the top of my head here. I wanted to come up with a few other activities that are legal that when we engage in them, they are risky behavior, and we do so knowingly. Hang gliding, bungee jumping, four-wheeling, right? That's a pretty risky behavior. Backyard swimming pools, downhill skiing on black diamonds. I've hurt myself numerous times at downhill skiing on those black diamonds, and it wasn't very fun. And in regards to backyard swimming pool, you know, drownings, etc. And we allow those. They're legal. And in particular, I had an extra neighbor years ago who, that wasn't a person, but it was a dog. There were the swimming pool in the backyard and those mats you put over it in the fall time, dog jumped on and drowned. So, again, allowing fireworks would not be the first time we allow legal behavior for activities that are risky.
Okay. Mr. Bruce West, State Fire Marshal. Welcome, sir. Begin with your name and title again. And
morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Bruce West, and I am the State Fire Marshal. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here today. It is the State Fire Marshal Division's mission to protect the safety and well-being of the citizens of Minnesota. Included in this is our dedication to protect all Minnesotans, including innocent bystanders of all ages who may become victims of someone else's carelessness when igniting fireworks. Prior to 2002, essentially all consumer fireworks were illegal in Minnesota. In reviewing statistics on fireworks injuries from the 10 years prior, 1992 to 2002, and the period of 2002 to 2012, in which the non-aerial and non-explosive fireworks were legalized, fireworks-related injuries rose by 111% in the state of Minnesota for that 10-year period from 2002 to 2012. Even more concerning to me as your state fire marshal is that 52% of the injuries from 2002 to 2012 were suffered by persons 19 years of age and younger, and 22% were children 9 years and younger. Since 2002, statistics also show a dramatic 500% increase or rise in property damage loss from property damage during that period of 2002 to 2012. Changes to the current fireworks statute would exacerbate these statistics. For these reasons, I am opposed to the bill. Fireworks are dangerous, and even well-supervised fireworks, used exceedingly, can be dangerous. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. And any questions for the fire marshal? Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, you mentioned percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Could you please provide this committee with the numbers? Because
sure.
If you have one injury in the first 10 years and two of the second years, that's a 100% increase.
Absolutely.
So I'd actually like to see the numbers, not just percentage.
Mr. Chair, yes. Committee members, we have that information. I'd be happy to provide that to the staff.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, no more questions. Thank you very much, sir, for your testimony. And Dan Bernardi of Regents Hospital Burn Center.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Dan Bernardi, I am a 29-year fire service veteran, 11-year U.S. Navy veteran, and now a consultant and program manager for fire prevention to the Burn Center. I'm here on behalf of Dr. Moore, the director of Regents Hospital Burn Center today. His duties weren't to allow him to be here. Some of the things that we've talked about are the comparisons between sports and activities related to the burn injuries versus burn injuries from things that explode and are not directionally controllable. So I don't see a comparison between many of these things. I heard about football and about other things where people are, I've even heard it compared to bicycle riding. Well, the injuries related to those things, there's exercise, there's the learning how to integrate yourself with traffic when you're on bicycles. Team sports have all sorts of safety things through the team effort, through the physical activity. These are growing and nurturing tools for our children. Whereas fireworks provide us with a momentary thrill. Why do we have a momentary thrill from them? From the anxiety that they give us, from the fear of them, and from the fear of having something go off, we back away from them. The first thing that happens is people get away. It's called shock and awe. That is where we get our enjoyment from these things. At what risk? Well, that's where I'm going to talk to you about, instead of numbers, one time I saw on the internet a very interesting thing that said 97% of data is skewed by the person presenting it, and it was signed by Abraham Lincoln. So I try to stay away from data if I can and go with case studies. And so I've got some case studies that have come through Regents Hospital that I'm going to share very briefly. Yes, the young are very vulnerable. And everything we do, the young and the old in my industries, have proven to be the vulnerable population that we protect. However, not everybody in these injuries falls within that. And so what it kind of shows to me is that the responsibility of people who should be in a mentorship or a leadership role just isn't there. In fact, they have to categorize the injuries related to fireworks in 8 categories because there's so many different ways that they can hurt you. one being misuse. One of the categories, one of the cases in the misuse category is a 51-year-old male that when he lit the fuse of a mortar, the fuse fell off and the paper extended at the bottom of the fire or the mortar caught fire. The mortar exploded, blowing off two of his fingers as well as severe burns to the right side of the body of a 51-year-old male, a person we would expect to be there as a mentor and a senior safety advisor in this situation. Another misuse is a 13-year-old male found a firework by the railroad behind his house. It then exploded in his hand initially upon trying to light it. The victim suffered burns to his hands, a corneal abrasion in his right eye, and lost his left eye. Playing with lit fireworks is another category where a 17-year-old tried to crush a firework that had misused and went off, or didn't go off but was laying there fizzing, and when he went to crush it, it exploded, causing severe burns to his right hand. Malfunction. When we talk about malfunction of fireworks, I'm wondering where the function is. There is no ability to control the direction this takes off. It can fly up directly straight up for 10 or 15 feet and make a huge angle and go anywhere it wants to go. It can land in the dry field, on the dry house, or in the chest of a 13-year-old, such as is this in this case. The debris from the exploding things coming down not only causing fires but other injuries to people around, normally eye injuries from debris. Long-term consequences have several cases. I don't want to continue with all of these cases. I have pages and pages of them. Playing with used fireworks, igniting fireworks too close to someone, setting fireworks off improperly. These are all categories that are needed for us to determine how to provide public education in these areas. But to me, they're categories that say this does not have a sound basis to safety. It does not provide us the things that team sports provide us, the training, the other benefits of them. And when we look at these things in our business, in the fire service as well as in the military, it was my job to find the balance, do a risk analysis, and determine what benefit versus what risk needs to be done. And when I see the momentary benefit and the shock and awe and the value from fireworks, I don't see that. We have a $1.9 billion surplus. Do we need $5 million in revenue, tax revenue, from something that's going to injure people that we know already does at the level we're at, and we want to increase it? I just don't see it. My life, being trained as a naval aviator and as a firefighter, none of this makes any sense to me to go forward with as responsible people in our community. And that's why I turn to you to look at that. So with that said, other states that offer these fireworks that we talk about people flooding from our state to going to, look it up. They're selling fireworks they don't allow used in their state. You can buy them there, take them back to Minnesota, do whatever you want, but don't blow them off here. Well, I don't find that to be reliable or responsible governing either. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Any questions?
Okay, members, any questions? Thanks, sir. Oh, Representative Ward?
Just a comment. The testifier reminded me, we were talking about the lakes and, you know, shooting things off over the lakes, and that's really common. It seems to be a little safer. Has anybody paid any attention to the cleanup the next morning, the debris from all this stuff? And we work so hard to keep our lakes clean and good fishing and things like that, and then we throw a lot of junk in them. So that's another thing that I think we need to think about.
Okay, Mr. Tim Vadnis, the fire chief, city of White Bear Lake. Welcome, sir. State your name for the record and begin.
My name is Tim Vadnis. I'm the fire chief in the city of White Bear Lake. And I am here with my colleagues from many different fire department organizations across the state to oppose any expansion of a list of legal fireworks. I'm not here with a lot of statistics. My colleagues are, that you will hear from later. But I can say anecdotally in my 41 years in the fire service that we all know that the expansion of the fireworks is going to increase our fire responses, the severity of our fires, and injuries due to fireworks. As the chief of a volunteer fire department, I can tell you that our city and the four surrounding communities that we cover, 45,000 people, we enjoy $2 million savings in payroll costs by having a volunteer department as opposed to a career department. We'd like to keep it that way. But there's a statewide crisis going on, and it's we're not exempt from that either, and that's recruiting and retaining firefighters across the state. In fact, the state of Minnesota has the lowest per capita of all firefighters compared to all of our surrounding states. And I think that situation is get worse as our calls increase. And so it's a huge burden right now to keep firefighters, volunteer firefighters particularly. And my question is, why would we want to increase the burden on our fire service by approving expansion of fireworks? I just don't think that is a wise move. With that, I will defer to my fellow colleagues with their comments, but I'm open to any questions now.
Okay, any questions for members? I think that's all the testifiers we have on the list. Is unless there's anybody else from the public that would like to testify. Yeah, Niles, come on. Mr. Zickman.
Mr. Chair, with the commission, has some show and tell.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Just don't light it.
Mr. Chairman, members, will these be raffled off after the presentation?
This is a single device here, Mr. Chairman. Both of these are single devices. So if anybody has a match, we can do a demonstration if you want. And we could also test the sprinkler system at the same time. Niles Dickman, I'm the chief of Spring Lake Park, Blaine Miles. We've been here today representing the Minnesota Fire Chiefs. Been involved in working on this issue for 21 years, so some familiarity with it. And as I look at it from a public policy perspective, and being a chief that long, working for three communities, working with three councils, and the interaction I've had with the legislature, I think some of the things you need to consider. Over the years, you're aware you do your state fair poll, and I had an abundance of time with nothing to do last night, and so I went on the internet and went back to that poll, and there's some great questions on there, but I won't bore you with those details. I'll confine my comments to the poll results specific to fireworks. So in 1999, you asked the questions, should we legalize, and 46% of the people said yes, and 49% said no. Again, in 2002, you asked the question, after it was legalized, and should people 18 and older be able to purchase and these be legal? So it was 50% said yes, 44% said no. But then you asked the subsequent question, should we go beyond the Class C? And 37% said yes, and 55% said no. But then again, in 2012, you asked, again, should we expand, further legalize? And 47.8% said yes, and 45% said no. So I think, you know, from your perspective, passing a law, you'll make half the people happy and half the people mad. And I think, again, as these start getting used, I think that will tip over back to the other side. When this device goes off next year, if you're a pet owner, if you're an elderly people, and many of us are going to get there because that's the only way we have to go is to get older. But I think when you see this, we seem to have lost our bottle rocket. It was 3.5 feet tall. Those things have a lot of allure to her, so somebody absconded with out of the storeroom. Specific to the bill that I also think you need to be aware of, the standard that they're referencing is the APA standard. That was last adopted or updated in 2001. There's a major problem, and it's the industry standard. So the industry is developing their standard that they're producing, and they could change it tomorrow. If it doesn't go big enough boom or high enough boom, they'll just change the standard. I don't know of any other dangerous device, and go back to four-wheelers. We regulate four-wheelers. We don't let people under 16 drive them and have to have training. We regulate people that hunt and those other activities too. But that's a major concern, that we would be referencing an industry standard on an explosive device. And so that would need to be addressed and worked with. And I think the provisions you have in the local control are a start. They're certainly a modification of what was originally introduced. And so some work needs to be done in that area also. So with that, I would close my testimony, and if the chairs will answer any questions.
Okay. Members, any questions? Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. I, like most of us, grew up with fireworks. We did the annual trek to Wisconsin. suffice to say, it sounds to me like what we're all, most of us are looking for here is a mutually disagreeable solution so that we can expand our fireworks a little bit. And I just want to say thank you for bringing that forward, and thank you for everyone that's got an opinion. And that way we can come to that mutually disagreeable solution and maybe have a better 4th of July.
Okay, anybody else? All righty. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, again, Dan Bernardi. I apologize. I was remiss when I was representing the medical I was contacted this morning regarding PTSD and the victims also that suffer from these things going off in the middle of the night throughout days that shouldn't be expecting these type of fireworks. And so I wanted to ensure you that there is a group within the folks, doctors that work for them, as well as our 2.5 million veterans from the recent wars, that have a association together to combat the expansion of fireworks due to the problems that it causes them. And so I wanted to make sure that that point was brought out, that it's not just a problem for the individuals in the community and the dogs, but also our returning veterans. We work real hard to raise our families to be fiscally responsible and make good decisions that will bring positive impact to our community. And I just don't see that moving forward with an expansion. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, gentleman that brought in these fireworks, what I'm wondering is which class fireworks are these?
Mr. Zickman.
Mr. Chairman, members, so the Class C novelty fireworks are the sparklers. They're non-aerial, non-explosive. So these would be, so the APA standard basically expands it, and these would be illustrative examples. And so it's going to legalize bottle rockets. I think everybody has a vision of the bottle rocket being the little stick and the firecracker at the end. Okay. One of the bottle rockets had was literally this tall, but these then all will become legal too under the APA standard. So that's what you're legalizing is the APA standard, which then they could change tomorrow. That was my point. You don't know what you're legalizing because they could change the standard. This is what it is today, but the industry would change it tomorrow, and now you can shoot that off. Class C is defined nationally.
Representative Johnson? Actually, the fireworks you have there are some of the safest fireworks because you light one fuse and you step back and the whole shebang goes off. You don't have to run up 100 times and light that fuse and get a chance of your face burned off. So I kind of like those myself. Any other people got any questions here? If you don't mind me editorializing, Representative Rarick, I think we'll have to bring this bill back every year until we get it punched through. I think it's just a matter of time. And there was, looking at the crowd and the members here, I think we have at least 4 loaded handguns in here and a room full of fireworks, and you know what? Nobody was killed or injured. Because in Minnesota, we believe in personal responsibility, letting people do some of the things they want to without over-regulation. So anyway, I'm hoping we can come to a resolve in this in the future and have some fun. But people are doing it all over anyway, and nobody's enforcing it. So why in the heck have it? You know. So and life is a risk, sir. You know, I agree there are going to be injuries, but I'm willing to accept that risk for the freedom to do some of the things that we like in any other thing. Anybody else got any questions? Representative Lomer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really am thankful that you brought this forward, and I'm really glad we're having this discussion. I live in a community and represent a community where it's 5 to 10 minutes to get to Wisconsin to get fireworks. Over in Hudson, there's tons of folks over there, and what I hear from my constituents is the comment, why can't we buy them here? People are using them anyway. And just, I know, I agree with the chair, life is a risk, and I was thinking when the gentleman from the burn unit was talking, I used to work for a plastic surgeon about 25 years ago, and he was actually getting his board certification, and he had a case where a gentleman was mowing his lawn one day, and he hit a rock, and a little child was playing across the street, and his ear was cut off by this rock shooting across the street. And, you know, things happen, and I don't know that. I mean, you could do case study after case study of bad things that have happened to people for various reasons. So I guess I land on, you know, nobody's stopping folks from using these anyway. They're being used, and it seems like we're just trying to get the ability of people to buy them here and get the tax sales tax revenue. So I thank you for bringing this forward.
And members of the public here, and you, fire chiefs and assorted personnel out there, we respect your opinion, and we didn't mean to make light of the subject here, but it's just something that we feel strongly about, some of us. And so thank you for your professional testimony here today. So anybody? All right, meeting adjourned.